بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Today this is our second session for Arabic lessons in Fiqh, المستوى الثالث, Level 3, Islamic University, Arabic Language Institute. I just want to say we're going to start by saying that last week, alhamdulillah, we got off to a good start and we looked at what this course will entail. Yani including the book of Tahara, the book of Salat and Zakat and Siyam and Hajj. And before that there was an introduction which we covered last week. Last week we went into what the course will entail, what its goals and objectives, and what are the main things that they were looking at to try to achieve. And then we looked at the introduction to the course itself. As far as the introduction to the course, I think we completed it. Yani it dealt with the definition of fiqh, the subject that it deals with, the benefit of studying fiqh, the ruling concerning learning and teaching fiqh, and then the five, yani al-ahkam al-shar'iyya, al-khamsa, the five, yani legal rulings of responsibility. And the last point, brief, was man huwa al-faqih. Okay, so we completed the introduction, the tamheed for this on page 4, 5, and the top of page 6, and we stopped at the questions. I don't know if anybody realized that there were questions at the end of the Tamheed. There were questions, yes. I did send the email, a little bit late, but I sent the email and I said, please, Yani, prepare yourself to answer these questions. I mean, it's automatic, right? Because part of the introduction to this course, we said that at the end of every section there will be questions, right? So we already knew that. We knew that last week from the beginning of the class, that there will be questions at the end of every section, and we have to answer those questions. So today, we're going to answer those questions. But before we answer the questions, just to give everybody, Yani, put everybody on equal footing, I'm going to remind you of some of what we covered last week. Okay? So, if you follow me, follow me. If not, don't worry. Page 4, Tamheed. أولاً تعريف الفقه. The definition of fiqh. هو في اللغة الفهم يقال فقه يفقه بمعنى فهم يفهم. The linguistic meaning of fiqh is al-fahm, understanding. والفقه في الاصطلاح, the technical meaning of fiqh, يعني in religion, is العلم بالأحكام الشرعية المأخوذة من أدلة الكتاب والسنة. يعني it is having knowledge. The technical meaning of fiqh is the knowledge of the Sharia rulings that are derived from the evidences of the book and the Sunnah. Last week we talked about this in detail. You had the whole week to review it. That's the definition of fiqh. It's very important to know what is the definition of what we're studying, linguistically and technically. ثانياً موضوعه, what is the subject of fiqh? What does it deal with? It researches. يبحثوا الفقه في الأحكام الشرعية المتعلقة بالعبادات كالصلاة والصوم والمعاملات كالبيع والربا والعلاقات الاجتماعية كالزواج والطلاق إلى غير ذلك من الأحكام. So what does it deal with? It researches the أحكام الشرعية, the legal rulings that are connected to العبادات, worships, والمعاملات, our dealings, and العلاقات الاجتماعية, social interactions. Worship, like salat and fasting. Mu'amalat, our dealings. Yani, like buying, selling, interest, things like this. Alaqat ijtima'iyya, social interactions, like marriage and divorce. And other than that, of legal rulings. What is this subject? It deals with researching the legal, Islamic legal rulings that are connected to different things. Primarily, acts of worship, interaction with the people, social interaction, yani, financial interaction, and so on. نعم. متعلقة متعلقتي متعلقتي connected to. Okay. ثالثا فائدته. What is the benefit of studying fiqh? It is معرفة الفقه. يعني knowing, becoming familiar and acquainted with fiqh. تعين المسلم. It helps and aids the Muslim to know the legal rulings related to his worship of Allah the Most High, and to know the legal rulings related to al-mu'amalat, mu'amalatihi, yani his financial, for example, dealings, وعلاقاته, his interactions with those who are around him from amongst the people. And also from its benefits is so that the person will be ala basira, that they will have clear insight into the affairs of his deen and the affairs of his dunya, his worldly life and his religious life. So he will have clarity and insight into what is correct and what is right and wrong in his worldly matters and his religious matters. فَيَسْعَدُ, and with this clarity, he's able to achieve success, happiness, فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ, in this world and the next life. The Prophet ﷺ said, مَنْ يُرِدِ بِاللَّهِ بِهِ خَيْرٌ يُفَقِّهُ فِي الدِّينِ, that whoever Allah wants good for them, he grants them understanding of the deen. مُتَّفَقٌ عَلَيْهِ, reported by Al-Bukhari and Muslim. When Allah intends good for a person, he gives them understanding of the deen. This shows the importance of having understanding in the deen. The fourth matter is related to the ruling concerning learning and teaching fiqh. What is this ruling? It's fard kifaya. And it's fard kifaya ala al-muslimin, upon the whole Muslim community. Bimana, meaning that it's obligatory on the Muslims as a whole that there be from amongst them scholars of fiqh in every time period and in every place in the earth, that there must be amongst the Muslims scholars of fiqh, so that they may make clear to the people the hukum shar'i, the legal, yani sharia ruling, fima yaqa baynahum min masailin fil ibadat wal mu'amalat wa ghayriha, yani so that there be people amongst them who have knowledge of the fiqh, who can make clear to them the legal ruling concerning anything that may occur of issues related to their worship and issues related to their dealings, financial or otherwise, and other than that. فَإِنْ عَمَّ الْجَهَلْ وَنْ عَدَمَ الْفُقَهَا فَالْمُسْلِمُونَ هِنَ إِذَنْ يَكُونُوا آثِمِينَ جَمِيعًا. But if ignorance is widespread amongst the people generally, and there are no scholars, there's the absence of scholars, then the Muslims as a whole, in that case, become sinners. Everybody became sinful, and everybody is blameworthy, and everybody is accountable for that. Then he mentioned the saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the meaning of which is that the believers, مَا كَانَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ لِيَنْفِرُوا, and the believers should not go forth all together, but rather if there's a group from amongst them, from every party from amongst them, a group who will يعني, go out and learn the deen, or remain at home and relearn the deen, so that they may warn their people when they return to them. Yani if they went out to learn, they would come back and warn their people. If the people went out, for example, in jihad and they remain behind learning, then when the people come back, they will teach them. They will give them understanding. لِيُنذِرُوا قَوْمَهُمْ, they will warn them, yani teach them about the deen. If they return to them, لَعَلَّهُمْ يَحْذَرُونَ, they will take heed to this. Okay, this is from Surah At-Tawbah, 122nd ayah, showing what? The necessity that some people have to learn, so that they may teach others. So then he closes by saying this point, it is obligatory upon the mukallif. And is it obligatory that every person be a faqih? No. But it's obligatory on every person who reaches the age of responsibility that he learn the sciences of the deen, al-ulum al-diniyah. From it, that which will suffice him in his worship and in his dealings with other people. It's obligatory on every individual who's responsible, who reaches the age of responsibility, to learn what he needs in order to worship Allah, and in order to do whatever he has to do in his dealings with the other people. The fifth matter is al-ahkam al-shar'iyyah, and it says here that these ahkam al-shar'iyyah, these five legal categories, there's no issue from the issues of deen that go outside of them, by agreement of the scholars of the Muslims, there are five categories of legal rulings, and they are the following: al-wajib, al-mandub, al-haram, al-makruh, and al-mubah. And in brief, yani the wajib is that which a person who does it will be rewarded. Yuthab fa'iluhu. Yani he will be rewarded if he does it in compliance and obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if he does it for that reason. And the one who doesn't do the wajib, he deserves to be punished. Allah may punish him or forgive him, he does whatever he wills. And an example of it are the five prayers. The mandub is that which a person who does it in compliance to the command of Allah will be rewarded for doing it. But he will not be punished if he left it off. It's mandub. It's commendable, it's recommended, it's beloved, but it's not mandatory. And an example of this is fasting the day of Ashura.
Is it yastahiqqu?
Yastahiqqu. he deserves to be punished. If he leaves the wajib, but the mandub, he will not be punished for this. The third one is haram, and it is ma yuthabu tarikuhu imtithalan. Whoever leaves it in compliance to Allah's command, Allah prohibited it, so he leaves it because Allah prohibited it, this person will be rewarded for leaving the haram. And the person who does it though, who does the haram, he deserves to be punished. Allah may punish him if he wills. An example of this is like drinking alcohol. The makruh, it is that which the one who leaves it, it's makruh, it's detestable, the one who leaves it will be rewarded if he leaves it in compliance to Allah's command, because Allah discouraged us from it. So if he leaves it, he will be rewarded for leaving it. He will not be punished if he did it, because it's not haram, but it's makruh, it's detestable, it's disliked. He will not be punished for doing it. And that's like, for example, the person leading with their left foot when entering the masjid, yani stepping in with the left foot instead of the right foot, or the person leading with the right foot when going out of the masjid, yani instead of going out with the left, going out with the right. This is something that's makruh. If a person yani doesn't do this makruh thing, they will be rewarded. If they do it, they will not be punished. And the final one, mubah, it is that which a person will not be rewarded for doing it, nor would they be punished for leaving it, like eating and drinking and sleeping. Yani as long as they do it in moderation, as long as if they do that thing that is mubah, as long as they do it in moderation, they will not be punished for doing it. And as long as they leave something in moderation, yani they will not be punished for leaving it, but everything in moderation. The last point is, who is a faqih? He is the one who knows a great amount of the legal rulings of the deen, along with knowing their evidences for those rulings from the book and the sunnah. This is what we covered last week, and I tried to race through it a little bit, but I want to put everybody on equal footing. Those all the brothers, yani we might forget quickly from last week, we might have forgot a lot, so this is like a reminder to us. And the people who are not diligent, who didn't do any homework, then we also want to help them so that those diligent ones who have good memories, so that they will not be ahead of us. We're going to all be on equal footing. Naam, you, Faiz, what is your question? Yu'aqab, I'm sorry. I said yu'aqab, I should say yu'aqab. Yu'aqab means that the person will be punished. Yani uquba, they will get a punishment. Yu'aqab. La yu'aqab, he will not be punished. Yu'aqab, he will be punished. Punishment will come to him. Naam, from aqaba, yu'aqibu. Should be yu'aqab. Yuthab, yu'aqab. Naam. Naam. It's definitely makruh, no doubt. It's detestable. Yani it's abhorrent. It's disgusting. Naam. How will a person do it? Yani if something is makruh, means Allah hates this. It's abhorrent, disgusting, detestable. So you'll say, ah, it's just disgusting. It's just abhorrent. Allah hates it. It's okay. I'll do it anyway. Yani the Muslim, person who fears Allah, they will not do that. Not consciously. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they're unaware. Maybe they wasn't thinking. But you can't say, it's only makruh, not haram. Okay, no, we're not going to get sidetracked here. Please pardon me. Inshallah. I mean, those issues we discussed a lot of times before, right? Yani in the earlier time, yeah, the scholars said, anyway, there's some difference of opinion about this, right? Okay? There's some difference of opinion about it. You know, but in any case, like sometimes they use that as an example. But some of these things actually, yani it's not crystal clear, but it's more likely that it's actually haram. It's more likely that it's actually haram. But anyway, we like going with this side, like the yani more lenient side, okay? But yani, so even if we say that it's makruh, that's why I'm trying to emphasize that makruh is something very horrible. Okay, because if we say, okay, it's not, the scholars differed, is this makruh or haram? Okay, no problem. We're not going to argue the point. Okay, it's makruh. We're not going to argue with you. It's makruh. Yani, it's something Allah and His Messenger hates. How you would do it? How you would do it? That is not possible. That you would do it knowingly and consciously. Except out of weakness. In that case, you admit your weakness and you ask Allah to help you and you strive to overcome it. Let's get moving to the questions. Okay? Is there anybody who came prepared for the questions today? 1, 2, 3. You know that these people, right? Okay. You're older than these people, so we'll give you the first question. The first question, Bayin. The first question. Yani, I prefer that we write the answers to the questions out. And the reason why is because I want you to be accurate. But if you can memorize it, no problem. But some of the questions are a little bit lengthy. So if you write it out, it's better. Plus, it's better for you always to write the answers to all exercises. It's better to write them out. Even if you memorize them after the fact, it's better to write it because writing the answers is also part of learning. Writing, being able to write. Okay, the first question, we're on page 6. At the end of the first topic, the Tamheed. And we have the first question, Bayyin ma'ana al-fiqh fil lughati wa fil istilahi. Yani, two parts to the question. Clarify the meaning of fiqh linguistically, fil lugha, and technically in the deen. Abu Bakr has the first shot.
The lugha,
faham. Okay, so linguistically, the meaning of fiqh is fahm. The same way you say faqiha yafqahu, you say fahima yafhamu. Same. This is the meaning of it. Understanding. Technically? Which ahkam? Al-ahkam al-shar'iyya. Uh-huh. That's derived from? Uh-huh. من أدلة الكتاب والسنة. Or من أدلتها, it's okay. It's okay. Same meaning. نعم. Okay, so the linguistic meaning of al-fiqh, it means fahm, understanding. The technical meaning of fiqh, it means the knowledge, having knowledge of the sharia legal rulings that are derived from the book and the sunnah. That are derived from the book and the sunnah. Derived from the evidences of book and sunnah, yani kitab and sunnah, Quran and sunnah. In other words, yani these legal rulings are based upon adilla, evidences that are from the Quran and sunnah. They're not evidences from the imam said, the sheikh said, the mufti said. That's not an evidence. But the legal rulings that we're talking about here are legal rulings that are derived from the Quran and from the sunnah. And the sources of Islam. Okay, question number 2. Man al-faqih. That came in the end, right? But no problem, they brought it as the second question. Man al-faqih, who is the faqih? Naam, Umar.
والذي يعرف جملة عظيمة.
جملة يعرف جملة مفعول به.
عظيمة.
Uh-huh.
من الأحكام. من الأحكام الشريعة.
Naam.
من الكتاب والسنة.
Okay, ما معرفتي. أيوه أدلتي. أدلتها من الكتاب والسنة. So the faqih is the one who knows a great amount, جملة عظيمة, a tremendous amount of the أحكام الشرعية, legal rulings, along with معرفة أدلتها من الكتاب والسنة. This is very important. The faqih not only has knowledge of the legal rulings, but he also, along with the rulings, he also knows, he's familiar with the evidences for those rulings from the book and the sunnah. He's familiar with the evidences that are, yani, the evidences for those rulings from the book and the sunnah. Okay, question number 3. ما فائدة معرفة الفقه وفي أي موضوع يبحث. Two parts to the question. What is the benefit of knowing fiqh, of being, yani, acquainted with fiqh? And the second part of the question, في أي موضوع. What is the subject that it researches, that it deals with? What is its subject? Okay, two parts. The fa'idah, the benefit of fiqh, and the subject of fiqh. Who wants to take any one of those parts? Naam, Abdul Haq. Fa'idah two.
عباداته العبادات لله تعالى ومعاملات وعلاقات بمن حوله من الناس وليكون على بصيرة من أمر دينه ودنياه فيسعد في الدنيا والآخرة كما قال رسول الله
صلى الله عليه وسلم
من يريد الله به خيرا يفقهه في الدين.
Okay, the first part of this question, what is the fa'idah, the benefit of being knowledgeable or acquainted with fiqh? He said that the benefit of being knowledgeable or acquainted with fiqh is that it aids, it helps the Muslim to become acquainted with the legal rulings of his worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and his, yani, financial dealings and his interaction, yani, interactions with those who are around him from among the people. And also, from the benefits of knowing fiqh, is that a person will be ala basira. And they will have insight to their affairs, their religious affairs, and their worldly affairs. And in this way, but based on this insight, that person can be successful. Yani, will be fortunate, will be happy, will be successful in this world and in the next life. Yani, successful in earning the pleasure of Allah. As the Prophet ﷺ said, that whoever Allah intends for them good, the way to that good is that he gives them understanding of the deen. Okay, the second part of the question. Who wants to take the second part of the question? Yani, what does fiqh, what is the subject that it deals with? What is the subject that fiqh deals with? You want to take it? Fadl.
Shari'iyyati,
naam.
المتعلقات بالعبادات الصلاة والصوم والمعاملات كالبيع والربا والعلاقات الاجتماعية كالزواج والطلاق
والتلاقي. نعم. يعني the subject that fiqh deals with, it is the sharia, legal rulings that are connected to acts of worship, and likewise connected to يعني our financial dealings, and likewise connected to our social interactions. يعني ibadat like salat and fasting, muamalat like buying and selling and interest, social interactions, yani like marriage and divorce, and other than that, of other legal rulings, yani that a Muslim needs to know. That's what it deals with. Yani it deals with the Sharia legal rulings related to various aspects of our life, whether worship or financial or government or social interaction. Question number 4: بين حكم تعلم الفقه وتعليمه وهل يجوز للمسلمين أن يعم بينهم الجهل بأحكام دينهم. يعني first part of the question is clarify the legal ruling concerning learning fiqh and teaching it. Now what's the legal ruling concerning learning fiqh and teaching it? Abu Bakr wants to take it.
هو فرض كفاية
على كل مسلم على المسلمين عامة. نعم. نعم.
أها.
نعم. No problem. No problem. Go ahead.
أها.
نعم. يعني حكم الشرع فيما يقع بينهم من مسائل. What kind of مسائل في العبادات والمعاملات
وغيرها.
نعم وغير ذلك علاقات الاجتماعية and so on. نعم. So the ruling concerning learning and teaching fiqh is that it is fard kifaya. يعني it's an obligation that is sufficed. Kifaya. What suffice? يعني if some of the people do it. It's an obligation. The whole group is sufficed if some of them do it. Fard kifaya ala al-muslimin. And this means that it is obligatory upon the Muslims that there be some scholars of fiqh amongst them in every time period and in every place, so that they will make clear to the Muslims the rulings of the divine law, the hukm shar'i, the rulings of the divine law concerning that which occurs amongst them, in whether it is in issues of worship or whether it is in business or in government or in social interaction and other than that. Okay, as far as the second part of the question, is it permissible that ignorance, yani be widespread, common amongst the Muslims, concerning the ahkam of their deen, is this permissible? هل يجوز للمسلم للمسلمين أن يعموا يعني بينهم الجهل بأحكام دينهم؟ Anybody? موسى نعم طيب يعني that it's not permissible for there to be general ignorance amongst the Muslims concerning the matters of their deen, the legal rulings of their deen. It's not permissible for it to be like this. If this happened, that general ignorance was widespread amongst the Muslims and there are no scholars of fiqh yani amongst them to teach them their deen and to make clear to them, then the Muslims in that case, in that situation as a whole, are all sinful. Anybody memorize this ayah from Surah At-Tawbah? Huh?
Okay, let me look again.
No problem. Anybody? Try. No.
ما كان المؤمنون
لو فلولا نفر من كل فرقة منهم طائفة
لولا نفر من كل فرقة منهم طائفة ليتفقهوا في الدين ولينذروا إلى قومهم
لينذروا قومهم إذا رجعوا إليهم. نعم لعلهم يحذرون. That's good الحمد لله. وعليكم السلام.
من كان المؤمنون
لينفروا
فلولا
نفر من كل فرقة ينذروا طيب. This ayah really is a very important ayah. It's not just for this topic, but because it deals with a number of issues that we don't have time to deal with today, but it deals with a number of issues, and that is yani general community responsibility, that there are certain things that yani the Muslims are responsible for as a whole. As long as some people yani fulfill those obligations, everybody is free of blame. If they don't, the whole community is blameworthy. This ayah makes us to know that some people have to go out and some people have to remain behind, that some people have to go in jihad and some people have to learn. Okay, but the community as a whole has communal responsibility. Some people are going to take care of this task, some people are going to take care of that task. But together, everybody taking care of something, then this is how the community is protected and preserved. So this is a very important ayah for us to reflect upon. Its meaning is tremendous. And there's some difference of opinion amongst the scholars concerning how, yani, what is intended here. But both meanings, yani, both ways that they explained it, and he ultimately come back to the same thing. Question number five. هل يجب على كل مسلم أن يكون فقيها؟ هل يجب على كل مسلم أن يكون فقيها؟ That's question number five. Omar says the answer is la. It's not obligatory. طيب. Anybody want to add to that answer? المكلف يجب على المكلف
ان يتعلم من القدوم في نية ما يكفيه في عباداته ومعاملاته.
نعم. يعني is it obligatory upon every Muslim that every Muslim has to be a faqih? No, of course not. But what is obligatory upon every mukallaf, yani every person who Allah, they have reached the age where they became responsible. They have to pray, they have to fast, they have to take these responsibilities. So every person who's mukallaf, it's obligatory upon that person to learn the yani al-ulum al-diniyya, al-ulum al-islamiyya, the sciences of religion. How much of it? That which is sufficient for him to perform his acts of worship and to fulfill his duties in the society, obligations to the people, financial, social, and otherwise. Now,
that when they are, you know, some people use that as evidence for not going out, like you don't go the extra ordinary to seek knowledge. You say,
yeah,
I know what I supposed to know.
So fine, if they know what they're supposed to know, they're good. But the problem is usually when people say that,
yeah,
those are the people who don't know anything.
Yeah, that's,
because if they knew anything, this is what would motivate them to realize that they don't know anything, therefore they will be seeking knowledge. And the people who think they know are the people who are ignorant. Because the people who know, they realize that, wow, I don't know much. But you can't know that you don't know until you begin to learn. Then you realize you don't know. But the people who don't know, they don't know they don't know. They think they are knowledgeable. Yani common people don't know anything about Islam. Sometimes we get questions from outside, from people who live in Muslim lands. And the Muslims in the Muslim land, even Arab countries, they don't know some basic things. Sometimes questions coming, like these people are in Saudi Arabia, they're in Qatar and Kuwait and Emirates, and they don't know. They're Arab people in Muslim countries, and they don't know. It's like very strange. So this is a proof that yani a lot of people, they don't know, but they don't realize they don't know until they get stuck in a situation and they don't know what to do. So may Allah save us from this. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And it's only when you begin to learn that you realize you don't know. That's when you say, wow, I don't know anything. I don't know much at all. But when the people say, this is, I only have to know what's necessary for me, I already know that, I'm good, no problem. Yani, you can remind them, advise them. If not, don't worry yourself. Question number 6. Arif المصطلحات الفقهية الآتية. عرف means what?
Define.
Make known. يعني عرف. يعني give تعريف. Give definition to the مصطلحات, technical terminologies. الفقهية. يعني the fiqh. يعني jurisprudent. يعني terminologies that follow. الآتية. The first one, الواجب. نعم, أبو بكر. فاعله نعم
ويستحق
تاركه
الإقامة
نعم
like الصلاة
الصلوات الخمس like fasting or صيام رمضان. نعم, the واجب هو ما يثاب فاعله, يعني the one who does it, the فاعله, he is rewarded. يثابو. يثابو is مبني للمجهول. يثابو فاعله. فاعله. يعني فاعله, he is the نائب فاعل. So it's مرفوع. يثابو فاعله امتثالا. يعني the one who does that واجب thing, يعني obligatory duty, whoever does it, then that person is rewarded. يعني if he does it امتثالا. يعني in compliance, in obedience to the command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it came to us in the Quran and in the Sunnah. And he also, yani the one who abandons it though, yani the one who doesn't fulfill that duty, deserves يَسْتَحِقُّ تَارِكُهُ الْإِقَابِ. That means that we don't say he's guaranteed to be punished, but he deserves to be punished. Yeah, and he deserves to be punished. But Allah may punish him, or he may forgive him if he wills. Yeah, and he liked the five prayers, fasting, Ramadan, pilgrimage for those who are able, and so on. The second one is Al-Haram. Who wants to do it? Now, Muhammad. Naam, the haram huwa ma yuthabu tarikuhu, the one yani who leaves it, who abandons the forbidden thing, that person is rewarded. If he's leaving it in compliance and obedience to Allah, then he's rewarded for leaving it. And as well as yani yastahiqu fa'iluhu al-iqab, but the one who does it, who engages in that haram thing, that person deserves to be punished. And an example of that is drinking alcohol, yani engaging in yani riba, what do they call it, interest, and so on, things like this, fornication, adultery, and so on. The mubah, anybody read mubah for us? Mubah. Huh? Yeah. Naam, faiz. Mubah, before that. Mubah. Yeah, read mubah. Because the question, they range the questions however they want it. على فعله
ولا
يعاقب
على تركه
like الأكل والشرب والنوم. يعني المباح هو ما لا يثاب على فعله, يعني person will not be rewarded for doing it. It's mubah, it's permissible, it's allowed. There's no special reward connecting to doing something that's just mubah. But likewise, the person who leaves it, who doesn't do it, it's mubah. He don't have to do it, it's not obligatory, it's just mubah. It's allowed to do. If you don't do it, you will not be punished. Like eating and drinking and sleeping, with the condition that the person who does these things or leaves these things does them with moderation, or abandons them with moderation, not going to extremes. Because if a person eats, yani it's mubah, yani it's no punishment for eating, right? But what if you go to the extreme? Yani then this is haram, because we're supposed to do things in moderation. And likewise, yani eating, drinking, sleeping, going to the extreme with it, or abandoning eating, going to the extreme. Yani the person says, I'm not gonna eat for the next 6 months. That's extremism. And they will kill yourself. This is killing yourself, okay? This is mubah. Yani mubah means, generally speaking, as long as it's in moderation, you do it, you leave it, no problem. You can do it if you like, you can leave it if you like, no problem, as long as it's with moderation.
Well, technical question.
Technical question.
Like you eat it with the left hand. Will you be punished?
It's makruh. Yani unless we're taking the ruling that's haram. Yani the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, لا تأكلوا بالشمال فإن الشيطان يأكل بالشمال. So eating with the shimal, is it makruh as haram? Okay, so yani the apparent meaning of the hadith, that's haram. لا تأكل, yani do not do it. But if we say that it's makruh, then yani if you leave doing that action, you will be rewarded. If you do it, you will not be punished if it's makruh. But if it's haram, then of course that's a whole different ruling altogether. Okay, we said mubah. Now mandub, al-mandub. Somebody, mandub. Somebody read first mandub. Fadl. Mente? Yeah, let Mente read. We didn't hear from him today. Al-mandub.
Al-mandub. Wa huwa ma yusabu fa'iluhu. امتثالا ولا يعاقب تاركه
يعني اسم فاعل تاركه اسم فاعل
بارك الله فيك
كصيام
يوم عاشوراء
نعم read it one more time كصيام
كصيام
كسيام
كسيام مي
كا is حرف جر.
نعم.
كسيامي يومي عاشوراء. نعم. It's okay. Okay. المندوب هو ما يثاب فاعله امتثالا. يعني whoever does it in compliance to the law of Allah. يعني it's mandoob. It's recommended. It's commendable. It's praiseworthy. يعني the mandoob is something that we are encouraged to do. So if a person does it, يثاب فاعله. If he does it in compliance to Allah's encouragement, he will be rewarded. وَلَا يُعَاقَبُ تَارِكُهُ. But if a person and he doesn't do it, it's mandub. It's not obligatory. If he doesn't do it, he will not be punished. Like fasting يوم العشورة. And we're encouraged to do it. If a person does it, it's rewardable. If they didn't do it, it's no sin against them. They will not be punished for it. They will lose out on the reward that they could have gotten if they had done it. Because the one who does it is rewarded, right? So if you leave it, you lose that reward. But you don't get punished. طيب, the last one, المكروه, نعم, عمر.
وهو ما يثاب تاركه امتثالا ولا يعاقب فاعله كتقديم الرجل اليسرى عند دخول المسجد
مكروه
وتقديم اليمنى عند الخروج منه.
Now, al-makruh, we mean by makruh something that is disliked, it's hated, it's detestable, it's abhorrent. Allah doesn't like it. Makruh, kariha. Huwa ma yuthabu tariku, imtithalan. If a person leaves it, knowing that this is something Allah dislikes, so they leave it. Because Allah dislikes it, this person will be rewarded. Yuthabu tarikuhu, imtithalan. Wala yu'aqabu, fa'iluhu. But if a person does it, even though it's detestable, it's disliked, it's hated, but they did it anyway, it's not haram. They will not be punished. Like the person, taqdeem al-rijli al-yusra, yani in the dukul al-masjid. The person who gives precedence to their left foot going in the masjid, going with the left foot. Or they give precedence to the right foot and going out of the masjid, meaning they go out with the right instead of the left. This is makruh. And there are many other any examples. We didn't finish our questions yet. We still have 7 and 8.
No, my question is about the definition.
Yeah. Okay, we said that this is a summarized definition, right? And then last week we did give you like a little bit more detail concerning these definitions from Sheikh Al-Uthaymeen. So also consider like what he said there, a little bit more detail on what's here. But this is like the basic summary. Now, what's your question?
For the definition, instead of using the ism fa'il, for example, saying
يثابو يعني okay يثابو it's possible but the meaning is a little bit different although ultimately it comes to the same. If you say leaving it is rewarded or the one who leaves it is rewarded, there's a little difference in the meaning, right? Ultimately it comes to the same thing, but the meaning here, the way it's worded here, is the one who leaves it is rewarded. But the way you want to say it, okay, it still comes to the same thing. Leaving it is rewarded. But we don't, in any ways, we're not talking about the person who leaves. We're just saying leaving it is a rewardable deed. But we want to say, no, the person who leaves it, he's rewarded. So the wording is like it comes to close meaning, but it's a little bit different, right? So sometimes Arabic is very meticulous. You change one word, it sounds like it's the same. Okay, it comes about to the same thing, but there's a little bit difference in the meaning. Slight, yani if you consider really, we're saying the action, that action is rewarded. But I want to say no, that person is rewarded who does that action. Okay, so yani it's pretty much the same. But yani that's how we can express things. You can be more exact and precise with what you want to say in Arabic, and it's crystal clear what you mean by it. Okay, let's go quickly to the next question. This question, number 7. بَيِّن مَعَانِي الْكَلِمَاتِ الْآتِيَةِ معاني الكلمات الآتية. Okay, give. نعم.
No, we left one.
Which one we left? Look, the question came out of, didn't come in the same order.
Oh. Okay.
The question came, yani they came wajib first and then haram and then mubah. Mubah came third and then mandub and then makruh. Okay, number 7. Bayan ma'ani al-kalimat al-atiya. Make clear the meanings of the following words. Athaba. What is the meaning of the word athaba? This came, yani what we were just reading, the five categories of legal ahkam on page 6. The word athaba came. They didn't give us the definition of these words, but what is the definition of athaba? Yani, how did it come? It came, na'am? Ajara, okay. Ajara, yani athaba means to reward, right? Uh-huh. Jaza, from jaza, na'am. Any other meaning anybody else has? Yani athaba, yani is the fourth form of the verb, right? Athaba yuthibu. Athaba yuthibu. Yani muthib is the one who rewards. Muthab is the person who is giving gets the reward. Yani some of the dictionaries said, yani athaba, it means kafa'ahu. Yani kafa'ahu. Yani he compensated him, right? Wajazahu, and he gave him a jaza, reward. Yani khayran or sharran. Yani it could be, yani that the person is given some, yani reward, kafahu or jazahu, yani khayran or sharran ala amalihi, depending on his action. Athaba, yani jazahu, or kafahu, kafahu, yani mukafa'a. Mukafa'a means to give somebody something in compensation for what they have done. Now, Yeah, Al-Wasit is a good dictionary. Al-Wasit, yani it's like not too far, you know. Like, you don't want one word, it'll give you 20 pages on it. You want like a moderate definition, Al-Wasit is a good dictionary. Yani that's what our teachers in the Arabic program recommend to us, Al-Wasit. Al-Wasit, yani wasat, yani middle. It's not real small, not too big. Maybe it comes in two volumes, sometimes they print it in one volume.
Audu is the same as Qatar?
Huh?
Audu. Ain wa Audu. Audu or Ain.
Is it the same, you said? As Wasit?
Ain, no, as a. Ain.
Oh!
Wa
and Dod or Del? Dod. Awadha is close. Yani awadha means to, yani to give something in place of something else. Now, but here this is not like you lost something and replaced it. No, this is you did something so you got rewarded. Kafa'a, yani kaf, alif, yani fa, hamza, ta marbuta. Okay, without tarmabuta, because mukafa'a has tarmabuta, yani the noun, but the verb itself, kafa'ahu, kafa'a, kafa'a. Okay, the next word, aqaba, aqaba, also came in these definitions, aqaba, yani aqaba yu'aqibu iqaban. What is the meaning of aqaba?
Azaba.
Huh?
Azaba,
maybe, naam. Anything else? Yani in the diction of yani aqaba, in the meaning of aqaba yu'aqibu, we should include in his definition yani aqaba, he said punished him, penalized him, whatever, but it should be in the definition of it aqaba ala amalihi, yani punish him for something that he did, yani for his evil action, for example, for his sinful behavior, for his yani corruption or something. Aqaba yani عذبه ها
فصاله
how's it spell كسى على يعني punish him على يعني for something that he did. Now the main point of aqaba yu'aqibu, brothers, the main point is that it means that a person is penalized, that they are punished for something that they did, some evil behavior. Yani some kind of sin or corruption or wrongdoing or oppression. Yani to give a person a compensation, a reward for their evil action, yani in light of what they have done of evil. The third one, Astalaha, yani this word also came, yani in the definition of fiqh, yani lughatan wastilahan, yani Astalaha is the past tense verb. It came on page 4, yani in the tarif of fiqh, yani came, yani istilahan, and istilahan, yani is from the verb Astalaha. Yani istilahan is the masdar from the verb Astalaha. Naam, what do we mean by Astalaha? Yani in one word you can say, or in a sentence, how will you explain what is the meaning of Astalaha? Or istilah? Naam. To elaborate. Okay, in a sense it is, but it's, yani that's more of explaining something. But istalaha, yani istilah means
to make agreement,
or to make reconciliation. That's one of the meanings, but that's not the meaning here. The meaning here is not that. Yani he's talking about making peace, treaty between the people, reconciling between. That's one of the meanings of istilah. I need to rectify the affairs between them. But here, istilaha, we mean by it, we mean that, yani, the people have agreed upon a matter. They have agreed upon something, yani, an expression or an affair that they have agreed upon. Here we're talking about expressions. Yani, a wording, a technical terminology that the people have agreed upon to have a certain meaning within a certain science. Okay, so there's technical terminology in the Sharia. So there's technical terminology, for example, for fiqh. There's technical terminology for hadith. There's technical terminology for different sciences. Just like there is in the worldly, in medicine, in engineering, different technical terminology. Maybe somebody gives you a passage out of an engineering book, and when you read it, you might not know some of the words, right? Because a lot of technical terminology. In a medical book, there's certain technical terminology, you might not know what the meaning of them. But the people, they have agreed on this term, this expression, having this particular meaning in this science, in this field of study. So it's something that has been agreed upon, an expression that has been agreed upon by people, for example, that has a certain meaning. So here in this term, and how we are using it here, we're using it in the Sharia. There are certain technical terminology in the deen. It has a meaning that's connected to, but yani maybe a little bit different than the linguistic meaning. That's why we say the linguistic meaning of fiqh is fahm. But the technical meaning is not just understanding. Yani, it's knowledge of legal rulings derived from the Quran and Sunnah. But that meaning, that technical meaning is something that has been agreed upon. This is what we mean by fiqh. Otherwise, linguistically, it just means understanding. Yani huwa faqih, huwa yani faqiha, faqiha al-amr. Means he understood it. Doesn't mean that he had knowledge of the Sharia legal rulings. Linguistically, but technically, we have agreed that this is the meaning in the technical terminology. Okay, so here, this is what we mean by astalaha, yani meaning that it's an expression or something that a group of people who might be specialists in a certain field or knowledge or science, they have agreed upon that this meaning, yani, is going to be applied. This is what we intend when we use this term in this particular science, in this particular field.
Can you say ijma?
Not really necessary. There doesn't have to be ijma, because technical terminologies are not always by ijma. Yani, for example, in hadith terminology, there are some scholars that use a certain term to mean something, other scholars don't agree with that. They said, no, I don't agree with that use like that. We have a different use for it here. Okay, so it's not necessarily agreed upon. I mean, it's not like ijma, consensus, but it's agreed upon by a group of people. A certain group of people, those people have agreed. This is how we're using this term. This is yani the technical intended meaning of this term in this science, in this field, in this particular subject. Now, yes, sunnah. Yani the meaning of sunnah for the scholars of hadith is different than the meaning of sunnah in the scholars of fiqh. Different meaning. Now, Mustalah Hadith, naam. Mustalah Hadith is the science, yani there are different sciences in study of Hadith, right? One of those sciences is Mustalah. Mustalah means studying the technical terminologies related to Hadith. Okay, so in Mustalah Hadith, you learn that Sahih has a certain meaning in this science. Otherwise, maybe a medical doctor says, Huwa Sahihun, he means that the person is healthy. But the scholar of Hadith, when he says, Huwa Sahihun, he means he's talking about Hadith. That's authentic, that has met certain conditions, that has met specifically five conditions for hadith to be sahih. Five conditions. So that's very technical. When he says sahih, he means something specific, exact and precise. That's in the science of studies of hadith. Okay, so Mustalah teaches us about those terminologies. That's it. Tells us what these terminologies mean in reference to hadith. Anyway, we got a couple more words. And we want to try to finish at least any of these questions today. We wanted to go into the new topic today. Now,
when we were taking the Tawheed class,
now,
for example, when we define Aqidah, we say first Lughatan and then we say Shar'atan. So, but here we say Lughatan and then
Istilahan.
So
Same thing. Here when we say Istilahan, we mean Istilah in the Sharia. The istilah and the sharia. But otherwise, istilah is general. Okay, so if we say, yani, shara'an is more specific. Shara'an, we mean the istilah and the sharia. But if you say istilah, it's general. But if you say shara'an, that's more specific. But what we mean here by istilahan, we mean shara'an. But otherwise, in general, if a person says istilahan, they don't have to mean the technical terminology of sharia. They just mean this is technical terminology that we have agreed upon in this science. Different, other than Sharia. So istilah is general, but shara'an is more specific. That's really is better to say shara'an. Or unless we say, yani istilah fi shara. Yani the technical terminology in shara. Okay, the next word that we had is ittafaqa. Yani ittafaqa, yattafiku. Huh? Ijtaba'a? Ijtama'a, okay, ijtama'a. Naam. Huh? What do you mean by that? That they are connected? Yani ittafaqa, it means. Yani some of the dictionaries they gave to me ittafaqa. يعني تقاربا اتفق تقاربا أو اتحدا يعني they were near, close, or they were actually one, meaning that whatever they said about this or the position they took was close to one another, or they were one upon it. That's the meaning of اتفق, meaning يعني in one word we say in English agreed upon, يعني متفق عليه, agreed upon by Al-Bukhari and Muslim, meaning that they were close or they were one on this matter. Sometimes you see ittafaqa yani muttafaqun alayh, and we find that the narration in Bukhari is a little bit different than Muslim. That came the meaning taqarab, and they were close. But sometimes the meaning came ittahad, yani they were one on it, meaning the exact same wording in Bukhari came exactly in Muslim the same way. So the meaning of ittafaq, it means that either they were close or they were one, yani exactly the same. Ittafaq. Yani they were in agreement, yani on this matter. Ta'ahada means to, yani that's a type of an agreement, but it's more like, yani ta'ahada, yani made a covenant, yani an agreement where you, yani you made a binding on us. We made a binding. We agreed to this binding agreement. Yani there's an agreement that we both have accepted, and we made a binding upon us. Yeah, it means to, the meaning of it here, in that sense, it means that you kept it, yani, you keep it connected, you didn't break the agreement, you kept the agreement, that's the meaning there, you didn't break the agreement, yani, wasala here means to connect, means you kept the agreement, you didn't break it, you kept it in force. The last word is قدما يقدم يعني it came in our text تقديم الرجل اليسرى تقديم from قدمة يعني the master is تقديم the verb is قدمة what does قدمة mean ها ها أمامة قدمة yeah it's like أمامة but قدمة means to put it in front to make it precede سبقة يعني سبقة is yeah to precede to But قَدَّمَ actually means that you made it to precede.
فضل.
Huh? That's one of the meanings. But here it's not فَضَّلَ. Because we said in the text that we came, قَدَّمَ came in our book in reference to the example of تَقْدِيم, الرجل اليسرى. تَقْدِيم here doesn't mean فَضَّلَ. It means that the person made this go first. Oh. They made their left foot go first when going in the masjid. That's مَكْرُوه. They made the left foot to go first. فضلا means okay but here but the real meaning here means to make it to go first to make it go ahead to make it be in the forefront to make it to be in the that's how it came in the meaning here yani that when you went in the masjid instead of making your right foot go first you made your left foot go first you made that one go first you put it in the front so that's the meaning of yani قدمه yani جعله يعني قداما made it, he made it to be in front one of them in front of the other or these people in front of those people or whatever يعني قدما means to make something to be out front to be first to be in the forefront to be ahead of something else okay the last question is اجمع الكلمات الآتية يعني whatever is عرضة has the meaning of to put something out front Now, arada means to, yani, yeah, it means put out front, meaning to put it on display, to put it in front of the people. But we don't mean to put in front of people. We mean to make something precede something else. Okay, the meaning here is that something preceded something else. So that should be in the meaning.
Maybe sabaka is
what? Yeah, it's somewhat, anyway. Yani, what's important here, though, is that we understand the meaning of these words. Yani they came, yani the maybe a masdar came, but they asking us what's the meaning of the verb that it comes to make sure that we understand the meaning. Okay, so these words, I think most of these words are clear to us anyway. Yani athaba means to reward, aqaba means to punish, astalaha to agree upon the technical meaning of something, ittafaqa to be in agreement or nearly in agreement, qaddama means to place something ahead of something else or someone ahead of someone else. إجمع الكلمات الآتية يعني إجمع means what? Make the plural, the gem of the following words. Okay, حكم أحكام rulings, نعم فقيه فقهاء يعني scholars of fiqh, of jurisprudence صلاة صلوات معاملة يعني جم مؤنث سالم معاملات عبادة عبادات again جمع مؤنث سالم طيب we don't have a lot of time left but let's at least look at يعني introduce the next topic we'll take it in the next class or maybe what time is this class supposed to be until 45 and now it's what 4:30 so we have 15 minutes طيب you want to read the next section or you want to wait till the next class? Faz said next class. Anybody else? Okay, who has read it already? Kitab al-Tahara. Who read Kitab al-Tahara?
Some of it.
Like how much of it? One page? One paragraph? Yani the brother said, I'm on my way. I said, no. Where are you? On your way. Yani 5 minutes away? 10 minutes away? Or you just left your house and you're on the way? Be more specific. He said he read some of it. We want to know how much of it did you read? Did you read one whole page or half a page? One page is good. Alhamdulillah. What did you read? Huh?
I said 2 pages.
He read 2 pages. MashaAllah. I read 6 pages. Allahu Akbar. Look, you have to do more than me. If I read 6 pages, you have to read 10 pages. Because you're supposed to be ahead of me. Because you don't know when I'm going to ask questions, right? So, okay, for homework, inshallah, we're going to read Kitab al-Tahara for homework. Yani page 7, page 8, page 9, Page 10, 11, up to 12. Okay, I don't think we can read that many in the class, but at least read page 7 and 8 and 9. 7, 8, and 9 minimum. That's the minimum. If you could go on and read An-Najasa wa Anwa'uha on page 10 and 11 and the top of 12. So there are two topics here. Kitab al-Tahara has Ta'arif al-Tahara on page 7. Malhadath, what is Al-Hadath and what is Al-Khabath? Then it has Ahkam, and the second part of it is Ahkam Al-Miyah, yani the legal rulings related to water, and then it has, yani the water is divided into different categories, At-Tahur and its ruling, At-Tahir and its ruling, and Najis and its ruling. And then there's An-Najasatu wa Anwa'uha, what is Najasa, and then different types of Najasa, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. Okay, so we'll take at least the ta'arif of al-tahara, and what is al-hadath, and what is al-khabath, and then we'll go to the next section, which is the related to ahkam al-miyah. Shall we read the ta'arif today, or wait till next class? Faiz said wait till next class. Okay, let's read it, and then next class we'll go over it again. I'll just read it quickly, okay? Let's try. No, you read. Somebody else read. Somebody read. Who wants to read? Musa. Musa is going to read.
Kitab al-Taharati.
Naam.
Ta'arifu al-Taharati.
Naam.
Tatliqu.
Tutlaqu.
Tutlaqu. Tutlaqu al-Taharatu. Wa yuradu biha. Wa yuridu biha.
Yuradu. Yani mabni lil-majhul. What is intended by it? Yuradu biha. Yani tutlaqu at-tahara. When tahara is used in the absolute sense without any restriction or definition, what is intended by it is an-nazaha. An al-akthar. Naam.
Wal-ibtida'u wal-ibtida'u an-shirki.
He's reading the first line of Kitab at-tahara on page 7. Ta'arif at-taharati. The definition of tahara. First line. Huh? I read it. I read it, and then he continued after I read it. Okay. تطلق الطهارة ويراد بها النزاهة. يراد بها النزاهة عن الأكثار. يعني when this word tahara is used in unrestricted sense, what is intended by it is يعني purifying yourself from أكثار, from unclean things. Making yourself free of unclean things. والابتعاد عن الشرك والمعاصي. يعني two meanings. To relieve yourself from unclean things and distancing yourself from shirk and sins. So that's two يعني sides of the meaning of at-tahara. Tahara has two meanings. To clean yourself from physical uncleanliness and to remove, distance yourself from shirk and sins. كما في قولي قول الله تعالى. نعم.
إنما يريد الله ليذهب عنكم الرجس أهل البيت ويطهركم تطهيرا.
طيب, indeed Allah intends to remove from you الرجس, يعني uncleanliness, يعني indecencies, O أهل البيت, يعني يا أهل البيت, يعني the meaning here, أهل البيت, يا أهل البيت. Yani, all people of the house, huh? Naam. Family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Wa yutahhirukum tathhira, and to purify you with a great purification, thorough purification, full purification. Wa qalu ta'ala also.
Khudh min amwalihim sadaqatan tutahhiruhum wa tuzakkihim biha.
Yani, and also the meaning here, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is being ordered, take from amwalihim, their wealth, sadaqa, yani take charity from their wealth for the purpose of tutahhiruhum, in order to purify them, wa tuzakkihim biha, and through it, through the sadaqa that's taken from their wealth, yani tazkiyatuhum. Naam, to sanctify them. Tazkiyah. Naam.
Fahadihi taharatun ma'anawiyyatun. غير
نعم
غير الطهارة الحسية
نعم So here, right, this, what is meant in this ayat, in these two ayats, what is meant here is فَهَذِهِ طَهَارَةٌ مَعَنَوِيَّةٌ. Yani this is tahara, not in the physical sense of purity, but the abstract sense. Yani not physical. مَعَنَوِيَّةٌ. Yani the, in meaning, yani, but abstract, not material, physical. This is the ma'anawi, yani tahara ma'anawi, not a tahara al-hissi. A tahara al-hissi means sensory, perceptible, yani that which you can perceive with your senses, that you can see, you can taste, you can touch. Yani here the meaning is ma'anawi, not tahara al-hissi, yani the physical purification, that yani purification from something that you can see, that you can smell, that you can taste, yani it's filthy, it's unclean. Okay, so we're talking about two types of tahara. This one in these ayats is tahara ma'anawiyya, not tahara hissiyya. Naam.
Wa taharatu fi istilahi al-fuqaha'i raf'u ma
yamna'u
min as-salati wa nahwiha min hadathi aw khabathin.
Naam. Ha, wa takunu
وتكون حقيقته حقيقة
وتكون حقيقة
حقيقة حقيقة
حقيقية
حقيقية كالطهارة بالماء وحكمة
حكمية
وحكمية كالطهارة بالتراب في التيمم.
Now, so here, at-tahara, in the technical terminology of the scholars of fiqh, is raf, yani raising up, removing ma yamna'u min as-salat, raising up that which prevents a person from praying. Yani they have some uncleanliness on their clothing or their body or on their place of prayer, or they're in a state of yani impurity, yani state of yani uncleanliness. Yani they... Yani have, he said here, yani that which prevents the person from salat, like yani min al-hadath aw al-khabath. Yani al-hadath meaning the state of impurity. Khabath means the impurities themselves, physical impurities. Wa takunu haqiqiyatan ka taharati bil-ma'i, and it will be yani this purification is real purification. Yani, will you actually wash physical impurities from your body with water? Or it could be hukmiyatan, yani, taking on the ruling of purification without any physical removing of impurities, like tahara bitturab. Yani, in other words, a person is washing themselves with water, physical purification. Or they're not using water, but they're just making tayammum. For example, by rubbing some sand over their hands and over their face. And it doesn't make the body clean, right? Yani physically clean. So this is tahara. It's actual real tahara from impurity, but it's hukmiya, not haqiqiya. Meaning it's not physical purification, but nonetheless, a person reaches a state of purity, real purity, when they, yani, do the purification that's hukmiya, like washing their, rubbing some sand over their hands and over their face in tayammum. Now here they talk about what is yani this hadath and khabath. Yani rafa ma yamna'u min as-salat wa nahwiha min al-hadathi hadathin min hadathin aw khabathin. What is hadathin and what is khabathin? Naam, ma al-hadath? Somebody read. Nasir, go ahead.
Ma al-hadath wasfun.
Yani a description.
Wasfun.
Equality. Naam. Characteristic.
Yakumu bil badan.
Uh-huh. Bil badani. Yani harf ja majroor.
Bil badani. Wamna.
Yamna'u.
Yamna'u. Insan.
يمنع الإنساني is مجرور by يمنع.
No.
يمنع is a verb. Object of a verb is not مجرور.
No.
Unless, yani, unless we're talking about what? What word would be take kasra after, yani, if it's the object of the verb? What kind of word will take kasra if it's the object of the verb? Mafulun bi, yani, mansub wa alamatu nasbi kasra is what kind of word?
It's
Mu'annath, Salim. Yani, when it's mansub, it takes kasra instead of fatha, naam. But this is not a jam mu'annath salim, insan. Yamna wa insana. You missed that one. We needed you for a minute there.
Yamna insana min as-salati wa tuhur
wa tawafi
wa nahwi huma
hima wa nahwi hima
wa nahwi hima wa huwa qisman.
Now, so the hadath, yani what is hadath and what is khabath? Al-hadath, it is a wasf, yani it's a description or quality, yaqumu bil badan, yani that exists in the body. It's a condition or a state, yani a description of something that exists in the body that prevents the person from salat or tawaf around the Kaaba or whatever is similar to them that requires a state of purification. And this, yani hadath, it is of two divisions. There are two types of hadath. This state that prevents a person from making salat. Now, go ahead, read. Omar.
Awwalan hadathun asgharun.
Asgharu, mamnu min as-sarf.
Asgharu, wa huwa ma awjabu.
Awjaba.
Ma awjaba wudu'an. Kal bawli wal ha'iti wal nawm.
Type. So the first division of hadath is hadath asghar, the minor or lesser state of impurity. And it is that which awjaba wudu'an, which necessitates, makes obligatory that a person perform ablution. Like, for example, what makes a person have to perform ablution, the minor impurity, is like urinating, defecating, or sleeping. It necessitates that a person makes wudu. It's hadath asghar, the minor hadath. Naam, thani.
Thaniyan, hadath akbar.
Naam.
Wa huwa ma awjabu.
Awjaba.
Awjaba ghuslan kal janabah.
Now, so the second division of hadath is the greater hadath, the greater state of impurity, and that it is that which necessitates a person taking a ghusl, washing their whole body, ghuslan, like al-janaba, yani like the person who's in the major state of impurity from having relations, marital relations with one's spouse, for example. And here I just want to note that the word ghuslan, as opposed to ghislun, yani ghuslun and ghislun with dhamma and kasra, is like the difference between yani wadu and wudu. Yani ghuslan is the process of washing the body, and ghisl yani means the water that's used for it, as wudu is the process of making ablution, and wadu is the water that's used for making ablution. Yani in other words, just differentiate between ghusl with dhamma and ghusl with kasra. Ghusl is the process of washing the whole body, and ghusl is the water that's used for washing. Okay, one more word. Somebody else? Abu Bakr? Huh? Yeah, he'll take khabat. Abu Bakr.
Ma al-khabat? Al-khabat huwa al-najasat al-lati tusibu al-badan aw-thaw aw-abdi aw-ghayraha.
Naam, al-khabath, yani unlike al-hadath, al-khabath huwa an-najasa, huwa an-najasatu, yani the thing that's najas, the impurity itself, something that's dirt, filthy, impure. An-najasa, al-khabath, it is the thing, the physical impurity. I mean, it's like, it's not a state of impurity, it's a physical impurity, okay, like allati tusibu al-badan, that touches, afflicts the body, or the garment, or the ground, the place where you might want to pray, or other than that. Yani, in other words, it's some kind of physical impurity that gets on your clothing, or gets on your body, or gets on your place of prayer, right? And this, yani, prevents a person as well, yani, from performing certain acts of worship. So the difference between khabath and hadath is a state, a condition that exists in the body. But khabath is some physical impurity that gets on the body, on the clothing, on the place of prayer.
But they can also be the same for, like, because it's hadath, you also say bowel, urination, and
no, the hadath is not bowel, but it's caused by bowel. Yani the condition that exists in the body of hadath is caused by bowel, but the bowel itself is najas, is najasa. Yani look at the wording here, right? Yani look, it says here, right? Hadathun asghar. Yani it's the lesser state of impurity. Huwa ma awjaba wudu'an. It is that which necessitates wudu. Like what necessitates wudu? Al bawl necessitates wudu, because when the person has urinated, now their body has the condition or state that they cannot pray in that state. Even if the urine didn't get on their body, yani they urinated, none of the urine got on their body. Their body doesn't have anything unclean on it. But the fact that you urinated puts your body in a condition now of unclean, yani of yani impurification. Yani you're not in a state of purification. As opposed to if the urine got on the body, that's the khabath. But the state that comes from urinating, without any urine getting on you, that's hadath. The state that you're in. The person passed gas, nothing got on their body, but the body is in a state now of hadath. Minor hadath. But if some impurity got on the body, that's khabath. Yani. Both of them prevent the person from praying, for example. But one is like something physical that yani afflicted the body, and the other one is something that occurred from the human being that caused the body to take on this condition. Yani for this condition to exist in the body, it's called a condition of impurity, a state of impurity, even though nothing impure is on the body. No impurity touched the body. Now,
what the evidence for what? How do you know that if you have hadas, by releasing gas or something like that?
How do we know?
How you know that?
Yani,
how do you realize that you have the hadas?
You mean how does a person know if it happened or not?
Yes.
There are many ways to know that a person passed gas, passed wind. There are many ways to know. But what came in the hadith, the Prophet ﷺ, he mentioned the most common way to know. That's not the only way to know. But he said, for example, if a person has doubt that they passed wind and they're praying, he said, do not leave the prayer. Unless you hear something or you smell something. Because hearing something or smelling something, you became certain that you passed wind. Then you have to leave the prayer. But if you didn't hear anything and you didn't smell anything, you might be unsure. So, in that case, if you're unsure, don't leave the prayer. Because you don't leave that which you're certain about for that which you're in doubt about. We don't lose our yaqeen by shek. So I'm not sure. But hold on. One last point. This makes us to know something else though. Don't think that this hadith means the only way to know that you pass wind is you hear something or smell something. Because it's possible. A person may pass wind. They know for sure they pass wind. Even though they didn't smell anything. Even though no noise came with it. But they know, yes, I passed wind for sure, guaranteed. But silent. No odor. No noise. So if a person is sure that they passed wind, even though they didn't smell anything, they didn't hear anything, so still you have to make wudu. You have to make wudu. If you're sure. But if you're not sure because you didn't get those clear signs, like smelling or hearing, you didn't get a clear sign, you're not sure, don't leave the prayer if you're in prayer.